there, everyone. Welcome to Talk Kidney to Me, your new go-to podcast for all things kidney. We're excited to share this space with you. Whether you or a loved one received a kidney disease diagnosis, you work in the space, or you want to know more about this unique area in healthcare.
Millions have kidney disease, but many don't even know it. We're here to change that.
That's right, Pesh. And the most common causes of kidney disease are diabetes and high blood pressure, which affect more than half of the folks in the U.S. So everyone should be interested in kidney talk. But despite these numbers, kidney disease doesn't get the same attention as other chronic illnesses.
Talk Kidney to Me wants to help change that, featuring the two of us as co-hosts, Sarah Eve, the Kidney Care Pro, and me, Pesh Patel, the transplant recipient who started A Kidney Life. We'll have guests from the kidney community and beyond. Join us for a fun and informative 30 minutes. From nutrition and wellness to exciting innovation, no topic is off limits.
Together, we're bringing awareness, education, and a whole lot of inspiration to the kidney community. All right, here we go. Talk Kidney to Me.
Well, we're finally here. Can you believe it? All the discussions, all the work leading up to this. It's been a lot of banter back and forth, but here we finally are. Sarah Eve, how are you feeling about it?
Yeah, it feels really good. You know, I love that feeling of bringing an idea into reality. It feels good to get this off the ground. It's a great new venture for us and for everyone listening in. I think, speaking of that, we should get to it. So today in the first episode of Talk Kidney to Me, we're going to share about our backgrounds before entering the kidney community. You'll see how these formative events kind of shaped our personalities and our professions, right? Up until the podcast. As your trusted host for the Talk Kidney to Me journey, I think it's only fair for you listeners to get to know us a little bit. Pesh, we're going to have you kick us off, and I'm going to ask you the question that we all dread on first dates and interviews, but here we go. Pesh, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, thank you. I was born in England, and when I was 10 years old, my family, we moved to Mississippi, of all places.
Oh.
Yes, I know. From North London to Mississippi seems like the natural flow. So it was a culture shock, to say the least. But I will say Amory, Mississippi is where we grew up, and great town, amazing people. But it was different in the sense that the city was black and white people only, and then we moved in.
All right, Pesh, I'm going to interrupt you because this
sure.
is a podcast.
Yes.
And I don't want folks to have to make judgments about your ethnic background or where
okay.
your family's from. So why don't you explain maybe, you know, if you're not you're black or white, where we, you know.
Yes, family, parents from India.
Okay.
So that's the difference there.
Okay, there we go. Thanks for that clarification.
Yeah, absolutely. So black and white people, and then us being brown, moved in. And as a funny story, in school, all the elections for student council, such as class mm-hmm. representative, there was the black representative and the white representative.
Okay.
Well, then I show up, and it's like, well, what do we do with this guy? And so they're gracious enough to create a category for me, and it was the other category.
Oh.
Yeah, but I love
good intentions, it seemed like, right?
Yeah, great intentions.
Representation, right?
Yeah, without
yeah.
a doubt. And the great benefit was I never lost an election. So I was very thankful for that. So finished high school in Amory, and then my freshman year of college went to Florida State University in Tallahassee, and then transferred to Southern Miss because the 4-0 I used to have in high school that was not maintained my
okay.
freshman year of college. So I went to Southern Miss. And then after Southern Miss, I moved to Baton Rouge, where my family had a group of hotels. And so I was in the hospitality business from a young age. Actually, our first business when we moved here when I was 10 was a local mom and pop hotel.
Oh, really?
And that's really how the hospitality got started. So on the weekends when the friends were playing football and baseball and everything else, you know, we were making rooms and vacuuming and doing things, and I did not like it at the time, but I did learn a work ethic at
yeah.
an early age, and so I am grateful for that.
Yeah, and it sounds like your family actually put some deep roots in this out there.
Yeah,
and right,
absolutely.
Really set up a family, a whole lifestyle.
Yeah, absolutely,
yeah.
And that was the goal for my parents when we moved here, was better opportunities for us, a better
sure.
life for us. And so they have absolutely provided and then some. So in Baton Rouge, had a few hotels in the area. And then I decided, hey, I'm going to be in hospitality for the rest of my life. This is going to get boring, I think. So I moved in the corporate world for a bit, worked at an insurance company doing internal marketing and training. And I enjoyed that. Again, once again, great people around there. And so I learned a lot from a corporate perspective.
Okay.
And then back in hospitality.
Well, you can bring all that experience, right? I mean, great to go out outside the family business for a while and do something else and then bring it back to, you know, to what you're doing. Yeah.
Absolutely. And then moved on and still in the hotel business. And then I realized one day, wait a minute, operations I don't think is for me.
Okay.
If we're low on toilet paper, if we're running out of soap, I think that's somebody else's problem. What I wanted to focus on was the big picture. And that's when I decided to venture out and do development and consulting, but in an international forum.
Okay.
Because I felt at the time that the U.S. market, at least the areas I was in, was starting to get saturated. I could see where that was going.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to dabble in something else. And from a young age, I'd always wanted to be in international business.
Mm.
So this was my way to get there.
Sure.
So that's basically where I ended up with hospitality. And again, the theme with all of this, from moving to Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
the college days, and afterwards, it's the people. And that's what I love most about hospitality. And it's always been my passion, is because the people I've met along the way.
Yeah.
The caring, the smiles, the people helping people. That's what I really appreciate about
it. Yeah. Can I poke at that a little bit, though?
Absolutely.
I mean, if I think about hospitality, I don't just think about smiles and people saying thank you. I think about people complaining and, you know, being hard to please. You know, how did you find the, you know, the passion in that or the enthusiasm when I think there's, there's possibility for a lot of negative feedback, I'd imagine.
Yeah, there's definitely negative feedback. And it was annoying at times. But then the good definitely outweighed the bad.
Mm.
It was the people that would go out of their way to say thank you.
Yeah.
It was the people that would go out of their way, and especially our staff and our colleagues that would go out of their way to make sure that everything was for the better.
Yeah.
And again, back to the big picture, like, what are we doing here? We're here serving people.
Sure.
And it's the old Hard Rock saying, love all, serve all.
Okay.
That mentality is what helped make it through those annoying and negative times.
Yeah. Well, you got to say focus on the positive, right? Stay in the light. You can find the good in any situation. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I do feel like I've been rambling on. And I do appreciate your questions, but I really think that's enough about me for now. So Sarah Eve, I know everybody wants to know a little bit more about you. So please take the stage.
Yeah, sure. Maybe a little bit more domestic beginnings or humble beginnings. I grew up in a small town in Pennsylvania. You know, just great childhood memories, super wholesome. You know, we played in the creek. I walked to school with my friends. I mean, you know, just really fortunate to have just, you know, a really idyllic, you know, just small town childhood. And from that, it was kind of neat because it was a small high school. And so I could kind of do anything. And so I did. You know, I acted in the school plays and I was a cheerleader and I was on the academic bowl team and I painted a mural in the school. And, you know, I think like I still kind of like that mentality of like dabbling in a little bit of everything, starting a podcast, right?
Sure.
You know, but my parents, even though we grew up in a small town, you know, they really instilled in me like a you know, this worldly perspective, right? Like this is just one, we are just one little corner of a big, beautiful world and millions of people and a million ways to live life. And so that really never left me. Even though I grew up in that small town, I was always drawn toward adventure, toward bigger cities, toward travel. And then my mom actually was a respiratory therapist, registered respiratory therapist, an RRT, for about 45 years.
Oh, wow.
She just actually retired from per diem work a few years ago, and she's in her 70s. And as an aside, she actually wants to go back and start volunteering again. You know, so I think, right, just a huge, you know, a lifetime of service in healthcare and just such a role model. I mean, you know, you always look up to your parents and seeing my mom just in the hospital for all those years and just so selfless, you know, it definitely left an impression on me.
And I have to ask to go back a little bit
yeah.
with you seeing that from your mom
yeah.
and her years in service, combining that with you having the worldly outlook, mm-hmm. even though you grew up in a small town,
mm-hmm.
how did that balance with your peers at the time? Were they of the same ilk, did you feel different at all with your outlook?
Yeah, sure. I think if you grew up in a small town in the U.S., I feel like there's that feeling of like, if you're in a small town, you either know you're going to stay here or you know that as soon as you turn 18, you're popping off and you're mm-hmm. leaving. And so I think that's, maybe how I felt a little separate, but I always knew as much as I love my small town and my folks still live there. I still go back and visit. I take my daughter to play in the creek now, like I used to do when I was a kid. But I always knew that I wanted more. I wanted more adventure. I wanted bigger cities. I wanted a mix of people.
Sure.
I grew up in a really homogenous area. It's, white, Lutheran, middle class, lower class, Like working, factories and farmland.
Okay.
And so I always knew I wanted something just different, different from the small town vibes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, but so then I went to college and, I wasn't really sure. I never had that thing in my mind that I knew I was going to grow up to be. Kind of just like I was saying in high school, like I kind of dabbled in everything. I wanted to do a little bit of everything. I've always been drawn to like art and science and English, right? So writing has always been something I've enjoyed.
Okay.
Science, biology has always been something I enjoyed. And then, a creative side too. So I ended up as a psych major in college. And the joke about psych majors.
I actually don't. Please share. I have to know this.
If you're a psych major, it's because you're just trying to figure yourself out.
Okay.
And that's not wrong.
Okay.
That's not a lie.
All right.
And then, but coming from that, I thought, well, hey, I think maybe being a therapist would really, I want to help people. I don't want to be a doctor or a nurse. I really thought maybe being a therapist. So when I finished my BS in psych, I actually worked for 5 years as a psych tech in a locked inpatient adolescent unit.
Okay.
A life-changing experience. I mean, imagine you're 24 and you're in charge of, you and a bunch of 20-year-olds are in charge of a unit of teenagers who are all actively suicidal, homicidal, or psychotic.
Wow.
I mean, it was deep.
Yeah,
imagine. And I think from that, I was in my early 20s, I realized that this wasn't for me. I couldn't do this full time. Caring for someone else's mental health drained my own.
Yeah.
And so when I was working there, I went back to school for nutrition and got my undergrad, my BS in nutrition from Cedar Crest in Allentown, PA. And that really started my whole nutrition journey.
Okay. So you did move in.
Yeah.
You went from one aspect, completely changed gears into nutrition. Was there something that led you to nutrition or narrowed you, made something happen where you're like, okay, nutrition is where I'm going next?
Yeah. I feel like in my life, I always have that, there's always a conflict between perhaps like my very practical, pragmatic side and my mm-hmm. free-spirited creative side.
Sure.
And so this is one of those times where like my practical side won. I wanted to be something, right? I had a psych degree. You can do anything with it, which means you can do nothing with it. So I wanted to be something.
Right.
And I wanted to be in healthcare, especially seeing my mom. And so that's what led me to nutrition. I just thought this is something I'm passionate about. People always need this. I'll have letters after my name that will mean I can always at least be this thing.
Okay.
And that's how I came to it. And when I started nutrition, I didn't want to get into clinical. So in nutrition, through an internship, there's food service, clinical, which is inpatient or the hospital, and then there's outpatient or community.
Okay.
And I really wanted to do outpatient or community, right? I wanted public health nutrition. Like you, I like the big picture, right?
Okay.
The systems.
Right.
And so I never thought I was going to end up in renal nutrition. And that's kind of a funny story how it started, actually.
Okay. I want to hear more. How you went from, so now we've gone from where you were initially to nutrition, and now
yes.
we're going to pivot again a little bit into renal nutrition.
Yeah, so my first introduction. So in the dietetic internship, my first rotation was outpatient, and that involved going to, at the time, it was a self-op outpatient dialysis unit in
okay.
Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And I got there early. RDs have a reputation for registered dietitians.
No.
We have a reputation for kind of being A+ gold star students, little overachievers, a little uptight maybe.
Okay, a little bit of a nerd in there?
Yeah, so I was there super early. I was all spiffed up. I had all my dialysis notes. And I got in, and this the smell of the dialysis unit. There's, if you know, right? There's an acid and a bleach and maybe a little bit of a blood smell. And I got in, and I went right to the bathroom and got sick.
Oh, no.
You know, and of course, like mostly I'm embarrassed because I'm an intern and I'm trying to impress everybody all the time. But I went to the bathroom, got sick. And of course, the first thought I had was, well, shoot, I will never work in dialysis, right? You can't show up every day to work and get sick in the bathroom. So that's kind of how my first introduction to outpatient dialysis.
Wow. So you were prepared for everything until you walked through the door.
Yes.
And the smell got to you and you're like, oh, no.
Yes. In my defense, listen, in my defense, I had not yet been through the hospitals.
Okay.
And there is a smorgasbord of smells in healthcare that you have to get acclimated to. And so I hadn't been through the hospital yet. So I still had like a, I still had a newbie stomach. So, you know, so in my defense, I wasn't prepared yet. But yeah, it was a rough beginning. And again, I did not think that I would ever end up in dialysis.
Okay. What a journey.
Yeah. Well, listen, now it's my turn to say it. I've been rambling for a long time. Jeez, I haven't talked about my high school in forever. So yeah, so let's hear about your part of the kidney journey. How did that begin?
I was in Australia working on a project. This was 2017. So I'm there. The project is in Darwin, Australia, which is in the Northern Territory.
Okay.
Actually, Darwin is closer to Southeast Asia than it is to any other major city in Australia.
Oh, okay.
So it's known as the top end. But
okay.
Flew back to Melbourne. That's where my home base for the trip was. And one morning, it was May the 1st, walking to my architect's office.
Okay.
Now, from where I got off the tram in Melbourne in the middle of the city, it was a 4-block walk.
Okay.
To walk that amount, I had to stop a few times because I could not breathe.
In 4 blocks.
Yes.
And let's just say this is not typical.
No.
Right? You're in good shape. You're in normal, decent shape, right?
Well, I thought I was completely out of shape.
Okay.
And why I was out of breath.
Oh, that's why you thought you were out of breath.
So
okay.
I'm like, man, I need to hit the gym once I get home. So I get to my architect's office and he's like, hey, Pesh, you need to go to the doctor because I've had fluid in my lungs before.
Okay.
And they had to take care of it right away. And it seems like based on your symptoms, you need to go. And I'm like, no, I'm fine. I feel good right now. Things will be fine. I'm there for a conference, a hotel conference.
Okay.
And so this was a Monday. I had meetings Tuesday through Thursday.
Okay.
Friday, I had nothing. So I told him, I said, listen, if I still feel like crap on Friday, I'll go then.
So you were just going to, you were just going to muscle through. You're just going to ignore it, walk it off.
I'm stubborn. Sarah Eve. Okay. I think you know this about me. And so I am not the best at taking advice at all times.
Okay.
And especially with things like my health back then.
Okay. Maybe we'll have a future episode talking about men's resistance and hesitancy to address healthcare. We'll put a pin in that one, perhaps,
Pesh. I don't know what you speak of. So fast forward to Tuesday morning, woke up, and it is the worst I'd ever felt in my life. And I'm like, okay, I really need to go to the ER. Went to the ER.
And you're by yourself.
By myself.
You took yourself to the ER in Australia.
Yeah. Actually, one of my colleagues dropped me off.
Dropped you off at the ER.
At the ER.
In a different country, right? Like,
yes.
Okay. Different healthcare system, whole deal.
Completely. Actually, like at a nightclub, I had to pay cover charge to get in. So I walked there and I'm like, hey, I need to see a doctor now. And they're like, okay, that'll be $500.
Okay.
So I'm like, all right, well, I need to go. So here's, you know, here's a credit card.
Sure.
And walked into the ER, and within 2 hours, I had 2 blood transfusions, ooh, and I'm in ICU. And I'm like, all right, so this is going on. So,
were you with it? Were you?
Yes.
Like, you remember this clearly?
Yes.
You were with it? Okay.
Yes. All the memories aren't there, but I still remember being rolled up. And actually, as I was being rolled up in a gurney up to ICU, I call my dad. I'm like, hey, I'm on the way to ICU here in Australia. Don't worry about it. I'll be fine. I'm sure I'll be out in a couple of hours and then I'll call you. And my dad, of course, is like, what the hell? And I'm like, yeah, don't worry about it. No big deal. They're taking me right now. I'll be out of here in a couple of hours. Fast forward through a battery of tests and found out that I was only born with one kidney, meaning only one kidney developed since birth.
Okay.
And that one kidney was only 2% functional.
Oh, my gosh. And if, right, you did not know, you only had one kidney.
Correct.
And that makes sense, right? We don't all get CAT scans or MRIs, right? If you didn't have anything, you wouldn't know that. So,
no
wow.
idea.
Okay.
Even my parents didn't know.
Sure.
And it was...
Do you have does your family have a history of kidney disease?
No.
Okay.
No history.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And so it was so atrophied and scarred, couldn't even do a biopsy to figure out what the root cause was.
Wow.
So all I was told was, hey, first and foremost, if you wouldn't have come into the ER when you did, you would have been dead within 20 hours of cardiac arrest. So that's that. So I'm processing all of this, or trying to process all of this. And then you move forward to, by the way, the only thing that's going to cure you right now is a transplant. And I'm on the 24-hour dialyzer with a thick tube stuck in my neck.
Yeah.
Continuously going while I'm going through all of this. So I am playing it off again, being stubborn, like everything's fine. This is going to be great. No worries at all. And I was in there for a week until I got released.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're in the ICU for the professionals in the room, right? Having CVVH, that continuous dialysis in a catheter.
Yes.
Right?
And then while I was there, they also put in a cath in my chest.
Okay.
So that I could receive regular hemodialysis while I was still there.
Sure.
Now, you would think that I would book the first flight back and get back to the U.S. to home, right? And in this meantime, by the way, my dad had flown over immediately to Australia to join me. But I didn't.
Sure. So wait. So you got a life-changing diagnosis. Mm-hmm. You were in the ICU. Mm-hmm. You're told you have this pretty whopper of a diagnosis.
Right.
You learned that you only have one kidney and, oh, by the way, it's not really working.
Right.
And you don't, your dad comes over to visit you, right? Because you called him and you're like, hey, dad, I'm totally cool, but I'm in the ICU. Talk to you later. And he flew over and you're just like, you're just going to stick it out in Australia and work?
Yeah, the ticket I had booked. Listen, Sarah
stubborn, huh?
Sarah Eve, I'd booked the ticket for a month.
Okay.
I had to stay.
Get the time in.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm like, hey, let me cram all the meetings that I had set for the month in 2 weeks while I'm still there. And so I did that. I would dialyze in the morning, and then the rest of the day I'd be out.
So you were an outpatient schedule three times a week?
Yes.
Okay, so they placed you somewhere.
Actually, it was every day.
It was every day?
Because it was so new.
Okay.
And my numbers, like my creatinine, my urea, all them, they had to do whatever they could every day.
Okay, interesting. I'll have to read up about how they initiate dialysis in Australia now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And so I did that for 2 weeks, and then I finally flew back. And that was in middle of the May and all that journey. And then finally I'm like, okay, yeah, now my original ticket date is here. So now I guess I can fly back home.
And you flew back home
with all
of this.
Yes.
Having happened and wow.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a fascinating, plot twist there too, because about 30% of folks in the U.S. do crash into dialysis, right? And so when we say crash, it can sound kind of crass, but it's this idea that they come to end-stage renal disease requiring some sort of renal replacement therapy, whether it's dialysis or a transplant, with no previous nephrology care. And you'll see, you do see in the field, and I'm sure we'll talk through, right, that really sets up the trajectory for some people, to have a very different journey than if they had kidney disease, nephrology care. So in that way, although it was Australia, you were working, in that way, that story really mirrors, what's happening in the U.S. right now for folks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, absolutely.
Wow. Thank you for sharing all of that. It's a lot to kind of think about and mull over. And what year was this?
This was 2017.
2017. Okay.
Yeah. And as I say it, it's still tough to think about that entire process of learning everything. But it happened, and here we are.
Here you are, right?
No
kidding. Some applause there for sticking it out, and I can't wait to hear the next parts of your story.
No, I appreciate that.
Yeah,
back to you now again.
That's a tough act to follow, Pesh.
Sounds like working in clinical kidney disease would not where you plan to go with your nutrition degree. So, please, how did you end up there?
Yeah, so I think we ended, right, with me puking in the bathroom at dialysis as a professional in my lab coat.
Initial day.
So, right, so I finished up my internship. I sat for my boards. You have to pass a national registration board, so I passed that. And the typical advice for a new dietitian is to go work in the hospital, right?
Okay.
You just learned all this clinical stuff. It's pretty detailed. Go apply your clinical knowledge, right? So no matter what you want to do, go work in the hospitals. So I was living in Allentown, Lehigh Valley Hospital and Health Network is up there. It's an 800-bed teaching hospital, a huge hospital. So that was my first job, was at LVH as an inpatient or a hospital dietitian.
Okay.
And, you know, I didn't have a clear passion in clinical. I was just kind of doing it to get the experience. And so I just kind of got the random floors that needed covering, which was the kidney floor that was not dialysis. So folks with CKD or perhaps, you know, kidney cancer, other renal issues.
Okay.
And I had transitional open heart. So post-thoracic surgery floor.
Oh, wow.
I was a terrible hospital dietitian. And I think everybody, I knew it. I would take.
Why would you say that you were terrible?
I know. I shouldn't say it like that. But, right, like, you would get an education, whether it was on the renal floor or somewhere else. And I would just spend so much time, right? And you might have, you know, your schedule might allow you 15 minutes to do a new patient education.
Okay.
Shoot, I'd be in there for 45 minutes. I'd know all the grandkids' names. We'd be talking about the dogs. I'd make these big plans. I was always late. Felt like I was always behind. You know, and I'll be honest, right? I spent a lot of time writing notes, connecting with the family, figuring things out clinically, writing my notes, and then, hey, they would just get discharged on, you know, something different, or it wasn't really valued. And so I wasn't, you know, I knew it wasn't my vibe, but I definitely, once I was in it, I knew this was not for me, although it was phenomenal experience and, you know, changed how I was a registered dietitian.
Well, I will say that from my perspective, since my diagnosis, I would have appreciated those 45 minutes because there are many times that we as patients don't get that quality time with the professionals. We don't have a chance to, not just for them to know us, but for us to know them and develop that relationship and have a trust where, hey, if I need something, I know I can count on Sarah Eve as an example. So you may have felt like you were, you know, doing something abnormal in that sense. But from my perspective, I know whoever you met and those lives that you touched was much appreciated.
Well, thanks for saying that. You know, it does make a difference. And, you know, getting to know people and that relationship, you know, it's just really fulfilling to me. And I think, you know, as a dietitian, you know, sometimes I would feel like, I know the docs don't have the time. I know the nurses don't have the time. There is never a nutrition emergency, right? I'm never running to a code. I have time. If I don't eat my lunch until 2 p.m., that's not a big deal. So I did feel like I had the flexibility in my job to spend those 45 minutes with a new patient ed, knowing that maybe the doc and the nurse wouldn't have that time. And not that I have that medical knowledge, but just to spend time with somebody, you know, kind of talking them through things. And then because I had the renal floor and because I was new, one of my colleagues, so there was an ADU, I'm going to start the alphabet soup here, acute dialysis unit, right?
Okay.
So that's folks who get dialysis in the hospital, the ADU.
Sure.
So we had a dietitian who just covered dialysis patients in the ADU. Shout out to Meredith. You know who you are. You went on maternity leave, Meredith. And they gave me the dialysis patients. And, you know, I loved it. I just did. It was just, you know, people, I would walk in the unit, people were like, oh, the dietitian's here, Sarah Eve, come talk. The doctor wanted to talk to you. The patients want to talk to you. The nurses are like giving you hugs. I'm like, oh, this is nice.
Right.
You know, I can sit and talk. You know, nobody was stepping on my toes because people, you know, on the professional side, people often say either, you know, dialysis specifically, either you love it or you don't love it.
Sure.
I loved it. So, you know, it just was a natural fit. And then when I was looking to, right about this time, I was ready to move from Allentown to Philadelphia. I needed, you know, bigger city, more stuff to do. I was really hitting, you know, a time in my life where you feel like you know, you want all the opportunities.
Right.
And so I took that step when I moved to Philadelphia to take my first outpatient position as a registered dietitian. And shout out to Walnut. Always have a soft spot in my heart for Walnut. That was my first outpatient dialysis clinic that I worked at for one of the big LDOs.
Okay. Wait, what's an LDO?
Okay, I should do that too. So I explained ADU. So LDO is a, there's a lot of jargon. LDO is large dialysis organization.
Okay.
And so that really means DaVita or Fresenius, right? Because DaVita and Fresenius together handle the operations for about 70% of dialysis clinics in the U.S. So for those of us in the field, we just say LDO. It means DaVita or Fresenius, as opposed to maybe a medium-sized dialysis company or an independent. So thank you for keeping me honest, Pesh.
Yes.
There is a lot of acronyms.
There are. There are. And we'll get through it. And it's good, though, because our audience, as well as myself, we get to learn the little bits and pieces that bring this whole thing together.
Sure.
And, you know, thank you for sharing your story, because going from where you were to where you are to that point where we've gotten so far, a little twists and turns.
Yeah.
You know, there was no straight line. And as we learn in life, nothing ever is.
But it all makes sense in hindsight, right?
No, absolutely.
When you look back on it, it all makes sense.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. So I think that's a great place to stop for episode one. Sarah Eve, please let everyone know what they can expect in our next episode.
Sure, Pesh. So in episode two of Talk Kidney to Me, we're going to focus on our kidney journeys. Two very different perspectives, Pesh through the lens of you receiving your diagnosis of end-stage renal disease and mine through career development. You'll have to listen in to hear all those details. This has been Talk Kidney to Me with your hosts, Sarah Eve Schaefer and Pesh Patel. If you're enjoying the show, hit that subscribe button so you'll never miss an episode.
Follow us on social media at Talk Kidney to Me on LinkedIn and Talk Kidney to Me, that's the number two, on Instagram.
We'd love to hear from you. Email us at info@talkkidneytome.com or contact Pesh on LinkedIn or through Instagram at akidneylife. Sarah Eve can be reached on LinkedIn or at saraheve.com. Until we talk kidney again, light and love to you all, and thanks for listening.
The Talk Kidney to Me podcast is for general information purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional health care services, including the giving of medical advice. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have and should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions.